Subcommittee on Health Policy to order and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2386. Sandy, would you?
Sure. They can't use the testify, but they want us to make that into a...
If you could do a review of the bill first, and then we have some testimony to put into the record, and then we have some testimony, I would assume.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. House Bill 2386 is brought before the committee at the request of Representative Tomei by the Oregon Physical Therapists Association. It allows licensed physical therapists who has received one of the items is, because there are several components of the bill. The first component is it allows a licensed physical therapist who has received the Doctor of Physical Therapy degree to specify the professional designation. It prohibits a person or a business entity from representing that they are a provider of physical therapy services unless the services are actually performed by a licensed physical therapist, and extends specified circumstances for a physical therapist to refer a patient to another healthcare practitioner. I believe we have the association here who will provide us with additional background as to this legislation.
Thank you, Sandy. And just for the record, I want to note that we have written testimony from James Heider from the Physical Therapist Licensing Board that we'll put into the record. Do we have copies?
Yes, I believe all the members have copies.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
What I'd like to start off with is the association writing us through the bill and the different sections. That would be very helpful, and we'll start with you. So I have Jenna Ingram, Tracy Rutan, and Ricky Susick. Welcome. Good afternoon. When each of you speak, please just state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Kotak, members of the committee. I am Jenna Ingram with Western Advocates and the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. This bill represents a bit of tinkering in addition to what was passed last legislative session with respect to the Oregon Physical Therapy licensing statute that had not been updated for a number of years, and trying to bring current law into practice with what is current practice across the United States. The bill makes three changes. I should say the first one is not so much a policy change, but a clarification, and then two policy changes in addition. The first is, as was alluded to, was the use of the term doctor. As you may or may not know, I know we've visited with a number of you, that physical therapists do receive many of them receive a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree, and the statute allows them to use the initials DPT. We believe that there's nothing that would prohibit them from going ahead and using the term doctor. However, we believe it should be, as with other licensing, disciplines, that they should say Doctor of Physical Therapy and not just use the term doctor outright. The second is protection of the term physical therapy. And Tracy will discuss in a moment some research that she's done with regard to recent court cases as to whether or not the term physical therapy is a generic term or not. And this is something that we discussed last session with Representative Greenlick at length. We believe we've come to some language now that addresses the concerns that were expressed last legislative session. I would like to clarify for the committee that the Physical Therapy Association is not in any way attempting to restrict the use of the physical therapy codes. That is not what we're here about. We are not even attempting to restrict the activities of other professions. We are here to make sure that whatever the other disciplines and other professions do, that they do not call it physical therapy. And if I can give you an example, if a physician prescribes, as a physician would prescribe a specific medication, that physician wants the patient to receive that specific medication. If a physician prescribes physical therapy, we want to make sure that that patient gets physical therapy. So regardless of what activities the other professions may perform, we want to make sure that it doesn't lead to patient confusion by calling it physical therapy if it's really not the physical therapy discipline. the final and third component of this bill has to do with the requirement to refer. Currently, there's a requirement that a physical therapist must re-refer a patient to the physician every 30 days, and that's been in the statute. Again, our statute has not been updated for a number of years, and everyone is pretty much in agreement that the 30 days is too short. We just don't heal in 30 days, and it's oftentimes difficult, I know from personal experience, to have to go back to the physician every 30 days and say, hi, still can't walk, can you give me another prescription for physical therapy? So the bill that we have, that you have before you today, removes that outright. That would be our best case scenario. However, in the spirit of compromise, as we go around and talk to members of the committee and other legislators, they would like to see a time definite. And in response, again, in the spirit of compromise and in response to those discussions, we have requested that amendments be drafted that would bring that to 120 days, allowing for 4 months of physical therapy before going back to the physician for an additional prescription. I will let Ricky and Tracy take over from there and respond to questions at the end if that's,
say a couple things.
If that's okay with Chair.
Yes, that's fine. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Ricky Sussick from the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. I was just wanting to say a couple things to clarify kind of what Genoa just said. number one, we don't have physical therapy codes. We have physical medicine and rehabilitation codes that physicians, chiropractors, lots of people use. They're in the CPT code book, etc. And so those codes can be used by anyone. So if someone's doing, a doctor in their office does ultrasound or a chiropractor or something, that's not a physical therapy code. It's a physical medicine and rehabilitation code, and any of people can use those that if it's within their scope of practice. So we're not saying people can't do the things that those codes represent, nor bill for those codes. We're just saying don't call it physical therapy. If you're a chiropractor, call it something else. If you're a doctor, call it, ultrasound or exercise or whatever it is you're doing. We just think if you're going to say to the patient or anyone else that you're getting physical therapy, it should be done by a licensed physical therapist. And the other thing about the direct access in the 120 days, we've had direct access in the United States for over 20 years in various states, and right now 43 states have direct access, many of which is totally unlimited. That doesn't mean that insurance pays. They can make their own rules about requiring prescriptions or whatever. And so, we really feel that, any limit of days is sort of arbitrary because it depends on what's going on with the patient. And lots of times we refer them back to a physician because we're seeing them and we're saying, you better go. This doesn't look right. Go to a physician or whatever. And it might be 3 days. It might be 30 days. And, a lot of patients are done before 30 days or 120 days. So sort of an arbitrary figure, which we really personally don't feel is necessary because our law already says that if something is beyond our scope or if we think there's a problem with what's going on with the patient that we are not able to treat, we are required by law now to refer them on to another practitioner. But again, like Jenna said, in the spirit of compromise, 120 days would certainly be better because that would cover most patients that we see other than maybe long-term stroke patients and people like that who in this kind of scenario could be going to a therapist, could be doing fine, making progress, or sending notes. We're writing notes, we're, keeping everyone apprised of the situation, yet when that magic number comes, they will have to go make a doctor appointment and see the doctor. And so I just wanted to tell you why we really think certain number of days as an arbitrary number is not our favorite thing, but we're willing to compromise and go with 120 days to kind of get off the dime on this. But there are a lot of states who have unlimited direct access. There has been no increase in liability, no increase in suits for malpractice for therapists. There just hasn't been issues, and we have literature to show that. So as far as doctor, if someone has a doctorate degree, I don't think any of us can say they can't call themselves Dr. So-and-so. So not all therapists, a lot of them have masters, some have doctorates, so that's kind of a moot point. And then the thing about the generic term, again, Tracy has some issues that she'll talk about, but I think that anymore physical therapy isn't a generic term, and I think for the safety of patients that people need to know if they're going to go to physical therapy, and it's going to be called physical therapy, it's with a physical therapist. Again, that doesn't prevent anybody from doing what they do, it's just what they call it.
Thank you.
Chair Kotek, members of the subcommittee, for the record, my name is Tracy Rutten. I'm with Western Advocates and here on behalf of the Oregon Physical Therapy Association in support of House Bill 2386. I wanted to give a brief overview, again, of some of the objectives and just touch on a couple of items and information that might be of use to you in hearing this bill today. However, first I wanted to talk to you quickly about a one-page sheet that you'll find in the packet that we submitted to you on educational requirements. And it's just a one-page sheet that I actually pulled from the actual website of the Pacific University College, which is the only physical therapist or physical therapy degree program in Oregon. And just to go over just a couple of those, and we actually are fortunate enough to have a professor from the college here today who will speak to you at more length, and I'm not sure she had the opportunity to sign up yet or not. So, but she is here. She, I believe, got here right as the bell rang. So she would also appreciate the opportunity to talk to you in more depth about the educational components of the physical therapy degree. But just for a little background, this was actually my first legislative session with a physical therapist. So for me, I felt I needed to do a little bit of background and research myself and found this all to be very impressive and very helpful in understanding where these people come from and the education they receive. If you look at some of the admission requirements there, the program receives over 250 applications, but is but the admission is highly selective, and enrollment in the DPT, or Doctor of Physical Therapy program, is limited to 38 students, which is a 15% admission rate, which I found to be pretty impressive. You do need to have 4 years of undergraduate work with a cumulative minimum GPA of 3.0. However, the average cumulative GPA of the class of 2009 was a 3.6. This also lists out some of the basic science requirements and other requirements that you have to have before being accepted into that program. I also wanted to mention, if you look towards the bottom of the sheet, it says additional admission requirements. Applicants must demonstrate the accumulation of 100 hours of paid or volunteer experience with a current practicing certified physical therapist. And that's an admission requirement. So I think that as well is a fairly impressive requirement. So in the end, with the Doctor of Physical Therapy program, you've got at least 4 years of undergraduate education, and then students admitted would earn their Doctor of Physical Therapy after the completion of a three-year program. And then in addition, and what's not counted in our hours, is also having to have spent 36 weeks in full-time clinical internships. So I just wanted to go over that, but you'll also hear in more depth about the education, again, from the professor that's joined us today. And going over the bill and some of the objectives, I think that the issue and clarification of the use of the term doctor has been fairly well covered. For us, it was a matter of confusion among the profession as to how and when that term should be used. We looked in statute, and we did not find anything specifying that physical therapists shall not use the term. However, we did find a statute that says when a healthcare profession uses the term, that they need to follow certain regulations and abide by certain rules to stipulate what they're a doctor of, so to specify their designation after their name. This applies to advertising, billboards, written materials. So we added, you'll see that there's already a list in statute of many professions who use the term doctor and need to specify their designation. We added us to that list so that when we do use the term doctor, you need to specify a doctor of physical therapy. And then also just to review over, we have an amendment. After meeting with Representative Greenlick, we had talked about this very issue, and he brought up a very good point. However, we couldn't get to legislative council in time, so we do have an amendment that we intend this to be for a person who's received a doctor of physical therapy degree. There are people who have received masters, especially physical therapists that have been practicing for a long time. But the intent is not to have them utilize the term doctor if they have not received their doctorate degree. So that is one of the amendments that would get to what our true intent was. In terms of protection of the term physical therapy, right now current statute specifies that a person shall not represent that they are a physical therapist or a physiotherapist unless that person is a licensed physical therapist. However, there's no language dictating that a person may not use the term physical therapy, even if that person is not a licensed physical therapist. In current statute, physical therapy is defined in our own licensing statute. And that definition is under ORS 688-010, subsection 5. As the care and services provided by a physical therapist or by a physical therapist assistant under the supervision and direction of a physical therapist. That's our current definition, and it almost seems to afford some protections, but it doesn't speak to other healthcare professions. For us, physical therapists receive a master's or doctor in physical therapy. They are regulated by the Physical Therapist Licensing Board through the state of Oregon. For us, the term physical therapy is not generic. It implies a service provided by a licensed physical therapist who has been educated, licensed, and is regulated in providing that physical therapy. To draw your attention to a document in your packet, you'll find a 1999 Supreme Court case in Pennsylvania that looked at this issue as to whether the term physical therapy was in fact a generic term. And if you'll turn to page 5 of that document, or I can simply read it for you, there's a really interesting paragraph here which I think really gives a good overview of what this issue is. And the court said that while there is indeed some overlap in the procedures used, and in this case it was chiropractors, and those used by physical therapists, the differences between the two professional groups, insofar as the services that they are licensed to perform, are substantial. Chiropractors are not the equivalent of physical therapists. Likewise, physical therapists are not a substitute for chiropractors. Each professional group offers its own range of distinct licensed services. In the end, the court did rule that this is not a generic term, and that physical therapists would indeed be able to use that term exclusively. As Jenna mentioned, and Ricky too, this does not prevent anybody from practicing anything in their own scope of work as long as they are, in their own licensing laws, allowed to practice that. This is not intended in any way to impact what somebody else does or is licensed to do, so long as they don't represent as physical therapy. We believe there's other words that are adequate to describe what it is that they are giving to their patients. In terms of the direct access issue, for us, as you've already heard, there's a 30-day limit currently. We've gone through a lot of research, and our association has a lot of information. And some of the reasons that we have gone for this, and some of the reasons I think that people bring up when they are concerned about this, are patient access. For us, the 30-day limitation on a patient's ability to receive physical therapy services is far too short, and it does require patients to make unnecessary trips back to their physician. This does create delays in their service, as you have to go back to that physician then, schedule an appointment, which we all know can take days, if not weeks, depending on the availability of your physician at that time. And it can become extremely problematic in us being able to ensure the best outcomes for the patients who need that physical therapy services beyond the 30 days. Also, in patient safety, currently 43 states permit physical therapists to initiate treatment without requiring a referral by a physician, Oregon included. Research, as was mentioned earlier, has indicated that there is no increase in malpractice claims or liability claims on states that have that direct access versus states that do not. And I included in your packet as well a letter from, if you'll see, there's a letter from Healthcare Professional Services, and they provide professional liability coverages to physical therapists across the nation. And they looked at this issue, and they too indicated that they feel like there are no trends relative and no additional risks for those who have direct access states versus those who are not direct access states. They also said direct access is not a risk factor that we specifically screen for in the underwriting of our program, nor do we charge a premium differential. So I thought I would draw your attention to that. And also cost effectiveness is the last point I'll make in regards to direct access. Research data has also indicated that direct access patients are treated for shorter periods of time and with less cost due to fewer co-payments, options for non-prescription interventions through treatment to treat impairments through exercise and other means. And it provides more timely access to physical therapy services, resulting in earlier return to the patient's prior functional levels. And the last document that I'll direct your attention to is a very interesting article that I found that talks about physical therapists actually are now being deployed to Iraq. And this is a fairly new thing for the Army. But it's a pretty interesting article if you have the opportunity to look it over. But they talked about the physical therapist program, which was previously tested in the Special Forces and Ranger Battalions. The program was such a success that they implemented it in the Army and other units. So then they talked about direct access being the issue, talking about treating the injury for the soldiers instead of sending them away with, quote, Motrin in a profile. For them, they're seeing that soldiers are recovering much more quickly and are having a better outcome from their ability to see physical therapists. And the physical therapists are actually being deployed alongside the troops there. So I think it's a pretty telling sign that physical therapy is very effective, and it's not maybe as effective when it's delayed by weeks or days. So with that, I think, I have a note from you. We also have an amendment I'll mention, and this is going to, I'm sorry to have to take you back. In the protection of the term language, we in the bill protected the term physical therapy. We also protected the term physiotherapy. We had heard feedback from stakeholders who we had contacted back in October and have tried to be able to converse with them about compromise language. We haven't yet had any verification that this is going to work for them or not, but in the spirit of compromise, we went ahead and took out the word physiotherapy to address some of the concerns that we had heard. And for us, really, the big term is physical therapy. Physiotherapy is actually a term that physical therapists use more commonly, I think, in Canada and other places
in Europe.
So we did take that out. It is our intent to compromise so that we can be able to move forward with this language. So wanted to address that as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And I'm going to take questions, then we might call you back after we hear from other folks. But just to let the committee know, I do have a copy of a memo to Ledge Council on those three amendments that they're interested in making. So I know you've put that into the works. Questions for the panel? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony. You talked about how direct access is permissible under Oregon law, but what I'm interested in is whether or not you have any data on how many physical therapy patients do go directly to the physical therapist rather than to the physician first and then are referred.
Thank you.
I don't have exact numbers, but I manage a very large physical therapy, widespread physical therapy department, and I would say probably at this point in time only about 10% of our patients would do that. By far, most of the patients we get are still by referral, and we expect that would continue. We refer back to physicians all the time, and we certainly, and other people can refer to us, dentists and chiropractors and all kinds of, nurse practitioners. So that continues to kind of be the common way into the system. I think that's changing. So you see, as years go by, more and more people with direct access, and I think a lot of times it's insurance companies that put the kind of restriction that they need a physician order, things like that. So it is a small amount right now, but we believe that if you or any of you wanted to go to a physical therapist because your knee hurt right now, just like anybody else who would, if you went to a massage therapist or a psychotherapist or whatever, you could go and you could expect to be treated. And right now, even if you paid out of your pocket, you couldn't go, So it really is just a restriction on you, the consumer, being able to choose to go to a physical therapist without a physician referral.
Thank you. Follow-up? Yes. Is it okay to say follow-up if it's an unrelated question?
Another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the change that you're proposing from 30 to, you said you'd ideally like no time limit, but you have this 120 compromise. Could you talk a little bit about how you arrived at the 120, and did you consider 60 or 90, or how did you reach that 120?
Madam Chair, Representative Bonamici, there have been a number of numbers that were thrown out. Last legislative session, I think the Senator Farioli threw out the number 90, and we discussed that. We've just had a number of, obviously, we would like it as far out as possible. So the number that we like the best is 120, although there have been other suggestions that are put forward as we go around the building and discuss. Everyone agrees, the nice thing about lobbying that particular issue is everyone agrees that 30 days is far too short. And so we have said, you know, well, what would you like to see? And it's been, the two most popular have been 90 and 120. Obviously, because we represent the physical therapists, we like 120. Thank you.
Other questions?
Chair.
Representative Greenley.
Thank you, Mayor. I do want to clarify, I have about three if I may. I do want to clarify, you said the patient needs to go back to the doctor after 30 days. When you're talking about direct access, you're not talking about going back to the doctor. These people haven't necessarily seen a doctor, is that right?
Correct. I noticed that little sort of grammatical slip, too. So they have to go, so they would have started seeing a physical therapist for their back pain or whatever, and then regardless if they're doing well or not, they would have to then go see a physician to be referred back.
Get evaluated and then to be referred back.
Correct.
May I have another
Absolutely.
Question? I think taking physiotherapy out is a good idea, but let's talk about the physical therapy term. And you raised the issue of the codes. Let's take a common procedure that you would bill for, and you would bill for it under a physical medicine code, is that right?
Correct.
Pick a procedure.
Therapeutic exercise.
Therapeutic exercise. And so what you want now is if anybody does therapeutic exercise, they can't refer to it as doing physical therapy?
Not unless they're a physical therapist, or a physical therapist assistant under a PT plan of care, yeah.
Even though six different professions might code that same code for that same procedure?
Right. The code says therapeutic exercise, so they can call it therapeutic exercise, but they can't call it. We would prefer that they not be able to call it physical therapy if the physical therapist isn't there.
Let me follow up on this before the next one. And there's some large list of these that you might bill for. You want to magically define which of those are called physical therapy and nobody else can call it a physical therapy service? Is that?
No. We're saying that no matter what anybody else does, they shouldn't call it physical therapy, no matter what it is.
Even though they're doing the same thing and coding it the same way and getting reimbursed the same
way. What they're coding for is the actual thing that they're doing, as in ultrasound or therapeutic exercise or something like electrical stimulation, things like that. So they're doing an actual modality that they're allowed to do under their scope, for instance, the physician. But we believe that they shouldn't call it physical therapy because the implication there is that it's being done by a physical therapist. And physical therapy is not ultrasound or e-stim or therapeutic exercise. It's a whole body of knowledge, a whole training, a whole profession that has certain standards and guidelines. And so a physical therapist and doing physical therapy are somewhat synonymous and should be done in together.
Thank you, Paul, again. Mm-hmm. But you're not putting a list of these things into the statute.
No.
How does somebody know whether they're providing? I mean, if they're...
If I may.
Right.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlake, there are procedures that are shared among multiple professions and disciplines, and we're not trying to restrict that at all. I think what we're mainly trying to get at is we don't want someone setting up shop saying, I have a physical therapy clinic because I do ultrasound or because I do some of these other modalities. We share those modalities, but they are not a physical therapy clinic. So if my physician says, you need to go get physical therapy, I'm not confused. I don't go to someone's new shop and knock on the door and say, do you provide physical therapy? Well, I provide ultrasound, so yes, I do. Come right on in. That's what we're trying to prevent.
So you also don't want that doctor to say, oh, I'm going to give you a couple of physical therapy.
Correct.
Procedures here. I mean, it's almost a few.
If you really want to be technical, in this terminology. What we would, they would say is, I'm going to provide you with some physical medicine and rehabilitation procedures, because that's what the codes are under in the code book. So I think we're kind of going down a different track with the codes. The codes, really, any code in the CPT, like I could charge a code, you know, a surgery code. There's no restriction. But my scope doesn't allow me to do surgery, so I wouldn't, you know, call it surgery and do it. So we really want to separate out the codes, which is the modalities and procedures, from the profession or the global or the term that we feel is our profession, which is physical therapy.
And just one more question. Can you tell me what this massage, why you're deleting this language in section 4, page 3, line, or what are all those deletions on line 1 through 9 about? But particularly, what's the massage about?
Oh, that was something that was in there, I don't know, way back where it came from, but it really, what a massage person does at an athletic department, it just doesn't belong in there, and we don't even really know what it means, so that's why we're taking it out.
Well, it says there are the statutes above that don't apply to massage, is that? And I assume if you take it out, those statutes above will apply to massage.
At practice, at a bona fide. That's right. So we don't understand really why that's in there, because if you're doing massage at a athletic club, you know, it isn't physical therapy. So I don't know. I'm not sure where that came. And it was like one of those things when you were reading a law originally a couple sessions ago when we got some of our new language in that had been written in like 1960 or something. And there was some things in there we were just trying to clean up. And that was one that just didn't get cleaned up last time, sort of by mistake.
Representative Greenlick, if I may, Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, when we looked at this bill, and we had a committee that went over the bill and, with a fine-tooth comb, including members of the licensure board, and it appeared to them that they were trying to regulate another profession in our statute, and we thought it would be cleaner if that profession were regulated in their own statute rather than the physical therapy statute.
Well, and perhaps we could ask LC for clarification of what actually happens if we take that out, just to allay your concern. Representative Gelser?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I received a letter today from an orthopedic surgeon in my district, and one of the concerns that he expressed was that changes here would require him to change his own practice of treating his patients post-surgically, that he would have to have a physical therapist on site. If I'm understanding you correctly, he could still provide, say he did surgery on my knee, he could still provide rehabilitative services to me that a physical therapist might provide to me while being called a physical therapist, as long as he didn't tell me that in addition to being my orthopedic surgeon, he was also a physical therapist?
Well, he also wouldn't say, well, now you're going to go have your physical therapy in this room, because that would imply that it was to us that it's being done by a physical therapist. See, what happens is a lot of orthopedists do like to employ, say, an athletic trainer in their office. And we don't have any, you know, we don't exactly like that. We'd rather have them come to a physical therapist. But there's nothing to prevent the athletic trainer from working under the physician plan of care and doing these things, doing exercise with the patient, doing whatever's in their scope of care. But we don't want him to call it physical therapy because it's an athletic trainer or a nurse's aide or a nurse or whoever that's doing it in the physician's office. It's not a physical therapist, so we don't want them in their office to call it physical therapy. And, in fact, Medicare requires, if it's a Medicare patient, that if it's going to be done even in the doctor's office, it must be done by a licensed physical therapist.
Can I do a follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. How would you enforce or monitor that? I'm just trying to imagine this as a patient. I go to my surgeon. I have my follow-up. In my mind, I'm having physical therapy. I'm having rehabilitative therapy because as a patient, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the licensing statute. So how... What difference does it really make for that patient what term of art that physician uses as he describes to the patient or she describes to the patient the activity that they're going to participate in the next room as part of their rehabilitation?
May I?
Do you want?
Well, I have an answer.
Okay. We all can't wait to answer. Ricky's smarter than I am, so I'll let her answer last. But Chair Kotek, Representative Gelser, because you are the patient, you shouldn't have to worry about it. If your doctor prescribes physical therapy under the statute, you would be assured that you were getting physical therapy. You wouldn't just be knocking on someone's door and say, do you provide physical therapy? And they would say yes. You shouldn't have to worry about it. When your doctor prescribes a certain discipline, you should make sure as a patient that that is what you get. If he prescribes aspirin, you need to make sure that you're not getting, you know, something else. And Ricky?
Well, I hear what you're saying. We just believe, you may or may not agree as the public, but we get people, what we really don't want, we see advertisements, you know, from chiropractors and physicians' offices and things that advertise in their thing, we do sports medicine, we do this and we do that, and we do physical therapy. And we don't think that they should be saying to the public, we do physical therapy here, unless they have a licensed physical therapist doing it. Now, right now that might not mean a lot to you, but I'm hoping that if we can get this clear, that down the road, we will be much more clear that when you as a patient have physical therapy, you would be getting it from a physical therapist, and you would know that if you're not getting it from a physical therapist, then it's athletic training, or it's chiropractic, or it's, you know, it's a physician. Because truly in the physician's office, an assistant or a medical assistant or an aide or a, massage therapists, all kinds of different people do things under in the physician office, and that's the physician's choice to do that, and we're not asking them not to in this particular case. We're just saying don't tell them they're getting physical therapy, because we don't think they are, unless you see a person who's licensed as a physical therapist, has had the education, has taken the licensing exam, and has that body of knowledge, which is more than just doing an exercise or a modality.
Madam Chair, Representative Gelser, if I might also. I hate bringing up personal examples, but I'll go ahead and do it because it just popped into my mind. But in October of last year, not this past October, October before, I was involved in an automobile accident. That very day, I did have back pain, so I went to my primary care physician to have that looked at. At that time, she told me that I should receive treatment for that, and she gave me options. And the options included I could go see a chiropractor, I could go see a massage therapist, or I could receive physical therapy. At that time, I understood when she meant physical therapy, in my mind, that was with a licensed physical therapist. And at that moment, I'm not sure what she would have called it to suggest going to a physical therapist. Physical therapy was such a generic term. I understood exactly what she meant when she said chiropractic. She meant going to a chiropractor, and I understood exactly what she meant when she said massage therapy, which actually sounded pretty nice, but I knew it would be a massage therapist. When she said physical therapy, as a patient, my mind went to a physical therapist. And again, I would stress, I'm not sure what you would have called it in that situation if physical therapy was a generic term that applied to all healthcare professions.
Just to follow up, and perhaps we can follow up on this offline later. I understand the argument that's being made about an individual that opens a practice and saying, I'm a physical therapist, or I offer physical therapy services. My concern lies in that gray part of another medical professional that also has a very long background of training and is very well qualified, that when that patient goes to that chiropractor, that patient goes to that orthopedic surgeon, I think they understand that they're going to a chiropractor or going to an orthopedist. And I want to be sure that patients, when they're going to these practitioners, are not limited in the services that they can receive, and that the communication and seamlessness of the provision of care from those professionals isn't changed. And I'm just wondering if there's a way that physical therapists can be called physical therapists, and we can know exactly what a physical therapist is, and in doing that we can preserve the ability for chiropractors and orthopedic surgeons and sports medicine practitioners to provide the care that they have provided for a long time very ably to their patients under their own scope of practice.
Madam Chair, Representative Gelser, I remind you that it is listed as a exemption from the law, that if a licensed healthcare provider is allowed in their statute to do something, anything, we don't care what it is, maybe it's something that we do too, that they are allowed to do that. We just don't want it to be called physical therapy. So it doesn't impact anybody's scope or their ability to provide a service to a patient. They can still do that.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Byrne?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And we've been down this line of, especially with Representative Gelser, this line of questioning, but I just want to firm it up in my own mind and perhaps draw the distinction or not, and I don't know who, I'm going to just throw it out there for the three of you to consider. Can we or can we not draw the distinction between informal conversation and formal solicitation? I mean, that's what we're getting at here, and I know the question's sort of been asked. But it seems to me, once again, I mean, to play devil's advocate a little bit, if you're a doctor or a physical or a sports trainer or whatever it is, and you're having a conversation with your client or your customer or whatever it is, and you say, we're going to do some physical therapy, and here's what it is. That's, in my mind, a very distinct difference and possibly a freedom of speech issue compared to maybe something more formal, which probably affects you more, which is, hey, on my business card, I say, even though I'm a chiropractor or I'm a sports trainer, I say physical therapy, or on my placard or shingle on the wall, it says that. I mean, are you drawing, can we draw that distinction, or do you just let me know, you don't not want to draw that distinction?
We don't.
Okay.
We don't want to draw that distinction because the athletic trainer, it's not a generic term, so he should not be saying, or she, we're going to go do physical therapy. He should say, we're going to do exercise, or I'm going to give you a heat treatment, I'm going to give you a cryotherapy treatment, whatever it is he wants to do as part of your athletic training treatment. Now, whether or not, you know, that is... you know, how enforceable that is in conversation, you know, we're more concerned when we see someone in the newspaper who's a personal trainer and the big, you know, article says, well, the physical therapy I do with my people at the gym, or we see the ad in the paper that says physical therapy. Those are the things that are very blatant and out there. So truly, no, I don't think they should say they're doing. You know, I don't say when I'm going to do something manual therapy, I'm going to do chiropractic on a patient. I don't do that. Because only chiropractors do chiropractic, you know, athletic trainers do what they do. I think if someone says they're doing physical therapy, they should be a physical therapist. That said, if there's something that we can do to make that, you know, that we're not going to, like, go to some Tim Mitch's house and his wife says, you know, Representative Mitch, you know, do your physical therapy for your, you know, leg today, that, you know, they're going to be in trouble because they said the word physical therapy. No. It's within a treatment setting by a professional that has a scope of practice. It's not you and your mom.
Follow up?
Yeah. I have to make one more comment with a question to play the devil's advocate, and please don't be offended by this. So you've mentioned some very distinct professions. You've mentioned, you know, physical therapist. You've mentioned athletic training. You've mentioned you know, being a chiropractor and being a physician. And so let me my worry with this, although I completely see what you're trying to do, my worry is with this, it's a little bit of a Pandora's box. Or maybe a can of worms is a better description. I have, let me throw an example. This is, we're talking about real life examples, Tracy. This is a real life example for me. I have a good friend of mine who is an emergency room physician. He's also a former Oregon Duck linebacker, and he and I like to go lift weights together, and we call it athletic training. Can he, as a physician, with this sort of, you know, what we're talking about here, if what we're saying for physical therapy applies to physical therapy, why couldn't an athletic trainer say the same thing? And would he, as a physician, who's definitely not an athletic trainer, talking to me or even advertising as an athletic trainer, wouldn't that violate sort of the same concept that we're talking about?
Yeah, it could if you want to take it to that degree. I think you talking to your friend, the doctor, and him saying we're going to do athletic training, although I've never actually heard anybody sort of say that when we're going to go to the gym and work out, let's go do our athletic training. But if, in fact, he said that, I don't think, you know, again, that's, in fact, we had something in our bill before, and I don't know if it's still there. We said sort of like the domestic use of the term is okay, which that means you talking to your friend, you helping your mother do her quote-unquote physical therapy, you reminding your child it's time to do your physical therapy, those sorts of things.
Page 3, line 3.
So that's still in there, and that really is, would be carrying it to an extreme, I believe.
I'm going to take Chair's prerogative here and wonder, I see I have Representative Bonamici and Flores on the list. Can you maybe write down your question, and then we'll get back to you? The reason why is I have Representative Crummell waiting to testify, and for interest of his time, I was going to ask the panel to sit down just for a couple minutes, allow Representative Crummell to testify, and then go back to questioning. So don't go.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Crummell, thank you for your patience. I know you're very busy.
Well, I think you probably stoked his fire on this one.
Keep your questions coming. They'll come back.
I'll be happy to answer any questions also, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to be here on House Bill 2386. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which includes Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. I have no position on the bill, and so I'm not going to say, yes, I'm in favor of it, no, I'm against it, but here are some things that I just want the committee to be aware of that I think are extremely important. And I should also qualify the fact that I am also a certified athletic trainer, and I qualify for the athletic trainer registration in Oregon. I have been practicing on and off for a little over 30 years. As an athletic trainer, so I know the area well. I also have worked on licensure issues for athletic trainers since 1977, so I've been at this a long time. I think Ms. Sussek has been working on physical therapy licensure issues for about as long as I've been working on athletic trainer licensure issues, because our paths have, before I became a representative, our paths had crossed many times before. So anyway, a couple of things that I think that just need to be clarified. One is with regards to the use of the term doctor, and one of the things that I am glad to see is that the discussion relative to PT, DPT, and so on are the way they're described in the bill. Because in earlier versions that I saw, particularly last session, unless you were licensed as a physical therapy, for example, you couldn't use the term DPT. Well, the problem is that is an earned degree. And if you're going to tell a person that that they have an earned degree but they can't use the designation of their earned degree because they're not licensed by a state, they're going to tell you to go jump in the lake. So anyway, that's so I'm glad to see that that's the way it is. The one area, and relative to the 120 days, whether it's 30 days, 90 days, 120 days, basically I think what it boils down to, it ends up being a PFA. PFA is plucked from air. And so, you know, it's kind of like, and I think 20 years ago when 30 days was chosen, it ended up sort of being a PFA then too. So I'm not sure that that's of any real consequence. The one thing though that I think is interesting with regards to this, and that is, irrespective of what the court in Pennsylvania has said, practice in society is a physical therapy does get used and tossed around as a generic term. And that's unfortunate for physical therapists because I know how hard they work for that credential. And so it's unfortunate. But that's sort of become kind of the societal nomenclature. And I think probably one of the things that we all ought to do is work to re-educate physicians and others who would be prescribing into our various professions what it is that they want. If they want physical medicine provided by a host of potential providers, then that's what they should say. But if they want physical therapy provided by a physical therapist, I would not disagree that that's what the physician should ask for. The other issue here is that insurance benefits many times are described right in their policies as being that are actually physical medicine benefits, but they are described as physical therapy benefits. And therein lies part of the rub. Matter of fact, I think that if you go look at your PEB insurance and look under physical and you look under benefits, it will describe physical therapy benefits that actually are a description of physical medicine, but don't necessarily mean that they have to be provided by a physical therapist. So it's an interesting concept. But the one thing that I am really wanting to draw your attention to, and that is on page 2, lines 31 and 32. Because the way that is worded is, it says to provide to or bill a person for services characterized as physical therapy or physiotherapy unless the services are provided by or performed by a licensed physical therapist. The problem in there is the term, actually I would just as soon see that entire sentence come out, but the problem that I have with that is the term characterized. Because as you were drawing out in your line of questioning, the term characterized in there could, it leaves it very broad. So now all of a sudden, I as an athletic trainer, I can't offer, provide to, or bill a person. It doesn't say anything about insurance companies or anything else. It says a person. So I couldn't, if I saw Representative Flores in my office for physical medicine types of services that are being provided that are within my scope of practice, I can't offer, provide, or bill to her for those services because they could be potentially characterized as physical therapy services. I appreciate very much what the panel was saying about what the intention here is, what the legislative intent is. But when a court looks at that, they're going to look at the wording, and they're going to pick out that word characterized, and therein lies the rub. So irrespective of what the intent is, in the legislation, what the court sees in the writing is going to become the problem, where somebody could get caught up in. So I would I would prefer to see the entire sentence come out, but I also understand. But the key word there, I think, is characterized, and figuring out another way to word that so that is not implying that a person that is a physiatrist, for example, is an MD that has a specialty, that is a specialist in physical medicine. And to tell them that they can't perform, offer, or provide some of those services that they would be providing under physical medicine is really would be a rub. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll end. Be glad to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Representative Flores?
Thank you. I think I'll just make a comment, because then you can take me off the list and you can address Representative Bonamici. But I think, Representative Crummell, thank you very much. That really did get to the heart of the question why I was on the list, because as Ms. Sussick was making her analogy under the services provided by an athletic trainer, she listed exercise, heat treatment, and something else that I'm not familiar with. And under the provisions that you're talking about, a person or business entity, i.e. an athletic trainer or chiropractor or doctor of medicine, could not offer, provide, or bill for those things characterized as something that, in this instance, and what we're talking about, be services provided by a licensed physical therapist. And I think that was, all of a sudden, became a light bulb moment. So thank you for pinpointing that for me.
Madam Chair and Representative Flores, you're certainly welcome. And I think that that's one of the things. You know, sometimes you say, well, what difference does one word make? A lot of times it can make a huge difference. And I think that I have no reason to doubt what the panel has said and what Ms. Sussick said from the standpoint of what their intention is. But at the same time, we have to be careful what the effect really does end up being. And I would state there is a huge overlap between the services that a physical therapist provides and the services that an athletic trainer provides and the services actually in some respects that even an occupational therapist provides. And then you throw in osteopathy and chiropractic and physiatry, and you know, you have kind of this mixed bag of providers out there, different levels of providers, and there is a huge overlap. And so we do have to be cognizant of that, and we have to be very careful that in something that is written into the athletic training statute, for example, does not infringe on the ability of a physical therapist or a physiatrist to be able to practice, and conversely the same with the PT statutes.
Thank you.
Representative Flores also wants to know how much you charge.
I can't tell you that on the public record at all. I'd be happy to let you know.
You know what? I'm not even going to touch that one.
Thank you, Representative Crummell. It was very helpful.
Thank you.
So let's have the panel back. Representative Bonamici still had a question.
Thank you for
Absolutely. And any others, and then we'll go on to the rest of the testimony that we have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Crummell didn't actually answer my question. I think he just made it a little bit more intriguing. When he said that the practice in society is that physical therapy is a generic term, and I know you provided the Pennsylvania opinion from 1999 that appears to be based on the Pennsylvania Constitution that says that it is not a generic term, but Representative Crummell testified that, in fact, in Oregon at least, it is. And so I guess I'm looking for something more to grasp when we have the practice. If the practice here in Oregon that it's generic, and you have people like the doctor who wrote to Representative Gelser today saying, my goodness, I'm not going to be able to do what I'm doing if this passes. And here we have in Pennsylvania one court several years ago saying it's not generic. I guess I need a lot more to convince me. What is this going to do to the industry if it is, in fact, generic? Because, I mean, the words physical therapy I hear all the time, and maybe it's unfortunate to you, but in order to overcome the impact that this is going to have on the medical field, I think I need a lot more to hang my hat on, if you know what I mean.
Chair Pro Tem, Representative Bonamici, I think the key lies in our exemption for those activities that fall within the scope of the other disciplines. We have not said, for example, in the example that Representative Gelser presented, those activities, if they are within the scope of the gentleman's license law, would not be prohibited. And we just want to really drive that home. We are not trying to influence anything that anyone currently does.
Can I answer that too?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair. Vice Chair. I appreciate what Representative Crummell says, because I think that word characterized is probably a little bit of a fuzzy word. And what you said, Representative Flores, was that, if I went to the athletic trainer, he couldn't or she couldn't treat, bill, or characterize so that they wouldn't be able to do what they do. That isn't true. What we really meant by that, and it may be a wording thing, and Representative Greenlick's good with helping me with words, is we don't want them to call it physical therapy, but that characterize, I can see where Representative Crummell would have a problem with that being a little fuzzy. So I would certainly be okay with if we could come up with a better word that just says, don't bill for physical therapy, don't tell your patient you're doing physical therapy, and don't advertise that you're doing physical therapy. Bill for athletic training, tell your patient you're doing athletic training, and advertise that you're an athletic trainer, and that would be fine. And you could do all those things that he wanted to do.
Madam Chair, Representative Bonamici, I also, if I can remind you too, that it just strikes me as odd, but under our current statute, and that is our current statute that applies to us, physical therapy is defined, and we do define it. And following that definition is also a very long list of those things that we provide. But physical therapy in our statute is already defined as the care and services provided by a physical therapist or by a physical therapist assistant who is under the supervision of a physical therapist. So, you know, in some parts, at first you go, well, doesn't that almost afford that protection anyway? But obviously it does not, otherwise we wouldn't be seeking this language. But the definition does already exist in statute that physical therapy is provided by a physical therapist. And in terms of the court case, the words First Amendment did come up quite frequently, and that was actually what brought that case forward in the first place. It was this is my First Amendment right to say physical therapy. You can't tell me I cannot say that. So if you do have the opportunity to read through the case, it's 8 pages, but I know you don't have a lot of time. I think that it does touch on those issues. And I think for us, you know, it was mentioned that, yes, this might be problematic for us, but I think it really truly is problematic for patients as well. I think it is confusing, and obviously we've all brought up in this discussion today there is confusion. And for us, we want it to be a clear statement that when somebody is receiving physical therapy that they understand what that entails.
I have one more piece of data that I could give you just on that subject. 30 states right now actually do protect the term physical therapy and say exactly what we're trying to say. So there is, it isn't just Pennsylvania who has that protected. And at least 14 states also include protection of the term physiotherapy. We had, as Jenna had said earlier, we had said we will let that one go because we know that chiropractors speak to physiotherapy and they like to use that term, and so we're like, fine, you know, okay, you know, but there are states that do actually protect that term also.
Just a brief follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do understand that what you're saying is that they will still be able to do what they're doing. They just can't call it physical therapy. And so I guess what I want to know is who then is responsible for, how does this happen that all of a sudden everybody has to change how they refer to what they've been doing? I mean, how does this practically get implemented in the field?
Well, again, it's a change, and I guess like any new statute or rules that come out, you know, I think that the Medical Society and the Chiropractic Society and the, you know, Athletic Trainer Association, everybody would be out there talking about it. Again, I don't think anyone wants to go out and, you know, listen in people's doors and stuff to make sure the words are never uttered. But we're just trying to, and the reason it came about nationally with physical therapists is because when we started, you know, like in, you know, World War One, there weren't all these other people doing and calling what they're doing physical therapy. And as athletic trainers, different professions, massage therapists, personal trainers, other people, you know, we even got into the issue of personal trainers putting PT after their name. I mean, things sort of happen which requires you to kind of change your statute because it becomes a problem. And so we felt it was becoming a problem nationally that people are getting very confused because it used to be that pretty much physical therapy was done by physical therapists, and people started doing different things in their office, and different professions have sort of sprung up. And everybody, like Representative Krummel says, we all have a lot of overlap, but we would like to just make it clear that we don't do athletic training, nor does the athletic trainer do physical therapy and chiropractic. We want to kind of make it a little more clear to the consumer who does what.
So I have two more. I have Representative Gelsman and then Representative Flores, and then I'm going to ask that we maybe hold questions so we can hear other testimony in the interest of time. So Representative Gelsman.
Great. Thank you, Representative Kotek. Representative Krummel's attention to offer to provide to or bill a person for services raised a new concern for me, which is while this protects the ability to complete the activity, will that other person who has that within their scope of practice be able to bill for that activity? Because what's the definition of characterize? If the insurance company characterizes that as a physical therapy benefit, as Representative Krummel alluded to in our own insurance benefit booklet, it talks about those as physical therapy services. How is the consumer or the patient protected to be able to continue to receive the services that they need? And two examples that I thought of while he was speaking, particularly when he mentioned occupational therapy, if you think about small children with disabilities who may see a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, and at that age they really do overlap a lot, I know that I have seen different codes used by either one. Would that mean that a family would then have to have more than one provider, thus reducing the number of times they could see someone, since there are such tight caps on insurance for the number of visits combined for OTPT speech in a year?
I can answer that, Madam Chair. Representative Gelser. A PT can never charge and say it's OT, and an OT occupational therapist can't charge and say it's physical therapy. So that really legally can't happen now, and an insurance company would not, you know, go for that. And we've had patients before say, oh, well, my, you know, I had OT, but my insurance doesn't cover it. Can you change it to say it was PT? No, we only charge for what that professional does. So in that particular instance, that shouldn't happen as it is. But OTs do charge on the physical medicine and rehabilitation codes, and they call it occupational therapy. And they never say, I'm doing physical therapy, I'm doing occupational therapy.
Right. I think my question is in that word characterize, because it's a very vague and ambiguous word. And if someone generically, because you've made the argument that physical therapy is an ambiguous term, that anybody could go and characterize, would that be a reason for an insurance company to deny a benefit, that this individual has characterized this or they characterized that as physical therapy, but the provider was a chiropractor or an occupational therapist. And I know that we're limited on time. I think the concerns that I'm having here, I sympathize with the concern, and I don't think anybody that's not a physical therapist should be able to call themselves a physical therapist. And I think that there's a way to fix that. But this extra step, I'm concerned, puts individuals receiving services at risk in ways that maybe isn't intended by the legislation, and I'm just very concerned about protecting the interests of those patients.
Madam Chair, Representative Gelser, we are too. We don't want anyone to not be able to do what they can do within their scope of practice now. And if characterize is the wrong word, we can look at characterize, and we can certainly look at that sentence that Representative Kremel is talking about.
Thanks for
Madam Chair, Representative Gelser, I know in the interest of time I'll be quick, but that was actually a new issue. I think all of us sitting there, it was a light bulb moment for us, too, hearing Representative Kremel speak.
Yeah, mention it, yeah.
And so, yeah, we will absolutely look into that because that was definitely not the intent of the language.
Thank you. And our goal is to have the language and intent match, so sometimes that takes a while. Representative Ford?
You thought this was a simple bill, didn't you?
I'm having a good time.
Yeah. Well, just as I'm hearing things, we all agree that there are areas within the various scopes of practice that probably have similarities, whether it's manipulation or, you know, elbow on the bad spot here or whatever, however they go about doing it. There's some similarities. It's called something else within the physical therapy field or perhaps in the chiropractic or other, you know, other medical areas. So what we want to do is be very careful of that they're prohibited from offering, providing, and certainly billing, and I understand within your PT codes and so on, those things characterized, those areas of similarity as physical therapy. And so I think that's the big glitch for me, and if that can be resolved, then I would be more than satisfied.
Madam Chair, I agree with that. I wish Representative Kremel would have thought of that before we sat here.
Well, there's clearly some issues around amendments that we're gonna want to talk about.
Correct.
So I'm gonna excuse you, and we have a few more people to speak today.
Dr. Kotek, thank you for the time and the thoughtful consideration that the subcommittee gave the issue. We really appreciate the very worthwhile discussion.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
It was very interesting. Thank you. So I'd like to invite up, while we're sticking with kind of the general discussion from this panel, Professor Cisneros from Pacific University. And then on deck, we'll have the folks from the Chiropractic Association and Western States Chiropractic College.
Okay. That's a sports term.
Yes, that was my sports term. Yes. I did play Little League. Hi, Nancy. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. It's Cicerello.
Oh, we are way off. You were probably wondering what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know who that is.
Cicerello, all right.
Want me to spell it?
Please.
Cicerello.
Yeah, we weren't close. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chairs, and committee members. I was asked to come and present information regarding the educational program that we have here in Oregon and represent what the students, when they graduate from our program, have at the end of their 3 years. And Tracy has already indicated, given you a synopsis. But the entry-level physical therapy education program has prepared the student to see patients, clients, and certainly children and students in public school settings with that aspect of our practice via direct access. It is not the intent of this component of the educational program to make medical diagnoses, but rather to provide students with the appropriate skills to determine when a patient must be referred to a more appropriate practitioner for evaluation and/or treatment. Students receive information related to medical diagnoses and evaluation primarily in three courses, and I think you have this document in front of you. DPT 550, which is applied physiology, 4 semesters, DPT 650, Medical Disabilities and Interventions 2, which is 2 semester hours, 550, 650, and 651. These courses cover information related to all the systems, but concentrate on information related to those systemic conditions that may present with musculoskeletal or neuromuscular signs and symptoms that may be referred from visceral organs. The students are taught how to differentiate these conditions and to refer to medical practitioners when the signs and symptoms do not fit with a musculoskeletal or neuromuscular cause. While this information is presented primarily in these three courses, differential diagnosis is a thread that runs throughout the curriculum. In all clinical courses, students are reminded through instruction and case studies to always be aware that the cause of signs and symptoms may be from tissue and organ systems that are not neuromuscular or musculoskeletal. And these courses include the pediatric course, geriatrics, physical therapy treatment of the spine, physical therapy treatment of the extremities, and adult neuromuscular systems. The students in the three courses, specific courses that I mentioned, have 107 contact hours of lecture and 35 contact hours of lab within the educational program. This does not include the experience that the students then received from their various their 36 weeks of internships, which total 1,440 contact hours in addition to the coursework. The State Board of Physical Therapy recognized our entry-level program several years ago as meeting the medical screening course requirements when that was still a requirement for our licensure in the state. So, the American Physical Therapy Association has a Vision 2020, and so that by the year 2020, it is the APTA's goal that all states have direct access, and as has been indicated already, 43 currently do, and there's some that are hoping to have that happen this year as well. Therefore, all the academic programs nationwide are preparing their graduates for direct access because we have no idea what state they're going to practice, and they can practice. So we are very confident that if an individual is educated in a program from Washington State, California, or wherever, when they come to this state, they will have completed all the information so that they are prepared for direct access. So,
thank you.
That I was going to respond to the educational preparation of within our state at our program at Pacific.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Cicerella. Questions? I just have a quick question on, you know, this is a discipline. Folks go through many years of training. This whole concept of what's physical therapy and not, I assume is covered in some degree, this whole sense of how you are perceived in the community and in the medical community. And is this a trend in most states that they're trying to get this clarified? It sounds like it is.
Mm-hmm.
You want to just comment briefly about that? Or?
Well, I think there's certainly discussions. We have a course on professional ethics and responsibilities, and it will certainly come up in that, and talking about your professional organization and how you need to portray yourself, and if you're going to go into private practice, what you need to have there. Representative Gelser mentioned children with disabilities. I'm responsible for the pediatric content and work with occupational therapists very closely. And within my coursework, you know, definitely saying these are some things that are, we could bill the same using the code, and that's the modality that we're billing for. We're not billing for the therapy, we're billing for the modalities that we use, and different professions can use the same modality. If we, you know, for example, if you build, look at all the people that take people's blood pressure. They're all going to bill it, but it's done by a different person, and they're looking at it from their scope of practice. So I may take a blood pressure of somebody prior to the treatment and then take it after to know how they're responsive. Or if they come in with some complaints and it's like, that blood pressure skyrocketing, we're not going to do physical therapy. You need to contact your doctor. And I may take that person into their office, into my office, and say, let's make the appointment right now, because I know that's out of my scope of practice. OT and PT and pediatrics, there is overlay, but we're both looking at it from different lenses because of our background, and we need to work together so that the individual child, patient, can get the best for the total needs, because we're looking at a whole system here and not just one part of a human being's body.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Newman?
I spent a couple of weeks recently interacting quite a lot with both PTs and OTs. And one day a PT would come in and I would do something with them, and the next day an OT would come in and I'd do the same thing with them. And I finally asked an OT, what differentiates in your mind PT from OT, and their answer was, well, we sort of deal below the waist and PT, you know, above the waist, although maybe it was the other way around. I'm not sure. I remember what the answer was. Are you counting on that answer?
I think that when I went to PT school many years ago, because the gray hair is showing through, we did probably present that, and it would have been the reverse of how you articulated
it.
But I think today we're looking, if we look at the whole patient, we're looking at, as a physical therapist, maybe I'm involved with gross motor, how does somebody get from point A to point B? I may want to recognize what can I do to assist that patient with his or her occupational therapist if they're looking at how does that person spend their time in household use. And we need both of our expertises to help the patient become functional and do what they want to do to return to their function, whether it's within their home, within their place of employment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Professor. Mm-hmm. And let's move on to the chiropractors.
Thank you, Tracy.
So I have, is it Dr. Sabol?
Sabol.
I'm doing a good job on the names today. Dr. Sabol, and then is it David Wicks from Western States? And then on deck we have Tim Martinez and Jim Anderson.
Afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Virg Sabo, representing the Chiropractic Association of Oregon, wanted to speak to House Bill 2386, which we have some concerns with. First of all, a definition of terms and whether the term physical therapy or physiotherapy is a generic term, and the physical therapy profession wanting to own the term physical therapy and physiotherapy. Tabor's Medical Dictionary defines physical therapy as the rehabilitation concerned with restoration of function and prevention of disability following disease, injury, or loss of body part. The therapeutic properties of exercise, heat, cold, electricity, ultraviolet radiation, and massage are used to improve circulation, strengthen muscles, encourage return of motion, and train or retrain an individual to perform the activities of daily living. That is part and parcel to what chiropractic physicians do every day. Physiotherapy is described as treatment by physical and mechanical means as massage or electricity. The terms are used synonymously in the field, and we believe that they, in fact, are. Historically, physical therapy has been part of the core curriculum of chiropractic colleges since 1912, and we've been using physical therapy and physiotherapy and physiological therapeutics for many, many years. The other thing I'd like to point out is that the Chiropractic Practice Act currently defines chiropractic as the system of adjusting with the hands, the articulations of the bony framework of the human body, and the employment and practice of physiotherapy, electrotherapy, hydrotherapy, minor surgery. I don't recall, and I may be incorrect, and the physical therapy folks can correct me, but I don't recall hearing the term physiotherapy in their practice act, but I may be mistaken. The other concern that the chiropractic profession has is with the utilization of the term doctor, what that implies when there is unlimited access to patients, when there is no requirement for those patients to be triaged by a licensed physician. Chiropractic physicians, naturopathic physicians, medical physicians, and osteopathic physicians take a course of study that helps them to, in fact, become first contact portal of entry healthcare providers that can recognize the red flags, which can be harbingers to frank pathology masquerading as simple musculoskeletal complaints. In your last page, a couple of students at Western States Chiropractic College, one of which is a master's in physical therapy, put this side-by-side comparison of core curriculum together. And where the deficiencies lie in the four-year chiropractic school versus the four-year doctor of physical therapy. deficiencies on the doctor physical therapy side. If you look primarily on the subject matter of physical diagnosis, general and clinical pathology, general pathology being the study of diseases and nature diseases, clinical pathology primarily the study of diseases by lab methods, microbiology and public health, clinical microbiology and public health, clinical lab, blood chemistries, knowing what to order and what they mean, and differential diagnosis. Gastroenterology, cardiorespiratory diagnosis, genital urinary survey, obstetrics, and also the radiographic anatomy, bony pathology, soft tissue radiographic interpretation, X-ray diagnosis. The doctor of physical therapy has introduction to medical imaging, which is 15 hours. The proof in the pudding, as far as the discrepancy between what the kids at Western States four-year schools are taking versus the students at the four-year physical therapy program, is the bottom total hours, including the 1,400 hours in clinics the physical therapists take. The total number of hours of training at the chiropractic four-year school is 4,896 hours versus 2,730 hours, some 2,100 hours less in schooling at the PT school. And many of those hours, which is our concern, are in the realm of physical, or in the realm of diagnosis. As a public safety issue, it's important for healthcare provider that has first contact portal of entry to be able to recognize conditions that can be of life-threatening nature. And it's our opinion that the current curriculum at Pacific University doctor of physical therapy program simply does not provide those skill sets. And we would suggest to them that, in fact, they raise the academic bar in their course curriculum prior to being allowed the privilege of continuing to see the public without a triage or examination by a licensed physician with those skill sets. Madam Chair, members of the committee, that completes my testimony. I'd be willing to answer any questions if you have any.
I have a question. Representative Bonnie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr.
Sabo.
Thank you. In light of the last sentence that you said, are you asking for a change from current practice? Because under current practice, there can still be the 30 days before a referral. So are you asking to change that as well?
We are not asking to change that. Okay. We're not saying that we agree with it either, but we're not asking to change the 30 days.
Just want to clarify that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I also have a question. So I appreciate the thank you for your testimony. I appreciate the definition from the dictionary, but as we've heard previously, the statute defines physical therapy quite differently from this. Are you concerned about the definition of physical therapy that's currently in statute?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the point I was making was that in our practice act, the term physical therapy is specifically included as the definition of chiropractic practice, and what they are asking is that we no longer have the rights to use that term, imply that we perform physical therapy or physiotherapy.
And follow-up, would you be... would you be supportive of their removal of physiotherapy? Is that the primary concern, or is it both physical therapy and physiotherapy?
At this time, it's both.
It's both.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Sabo, would you be comfortable with leaving in the provisions that prohibit someone from advertising that they are a physical therapist if they are not, in fact, a physical therapist?
Madam Chair, Representative Gelser, absolutely. If you're not a licensed physical therapist, you simply cannot hold yourself out to be so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is Mr. Ricks here?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee and provide some input into this House bill. I'm Dr. David Wicks. I'm from the Western States Chiropractic College, and I'm the executive vice president at that institution. I've prepared for you a written copy of my testimony. I'll shorten it up a little bit in the interest of time and also because of some of the previous testimony that has already occurred. I am not an expert in the curriculum of the physical therapy programs in this state or in other states, and I'm not here to convince you of that. I'm here to speak simply as to what the chiropractic colleges teach, as well as to address the issue that the last individual addressed, which was the use of the term doctor and what that implies to the public. And I'd like to say the differentiation between the use of a title as conferred by a professional degree program and an academic degree program, and also what the public itself expects out of those terms. So obviously there's some concern over the proposed clinical designation of the term doctor by the physical therapy profession. The concern is based upon some logical comparisons of the education and the rigorous pre-licensure assessment of physician-level providers to those in physical therapy. Obviously, there is some debate that's inherent in this whole issue relating to pragmatic and economic factors, and some of that's been alluded to in terms of charging and so forth. But I'm also looking at it from a public safety and provider competency issue. As I looked at this issue, I went and looked at the evolution in the physical therapy profession from the bachelor's degree programs and the master's degree programs into what is now becoming very common, which is the Doctor of Physical Therapy, or DPT. In moving from those previous programs into the current DPT program, the educational programs increased approximately 30 semester hours in length. There's a number of programs in the United States, including here in Oregon, in which the physical therapist who already has a bachelor's or a master's degree in physical therapy can enroll in what's referred to as a transitional DPT program. In other words, these are programs that are designed for the physical therapist that has an earlier degree to get the Doctor of Physical Therapy. It's not unusual for these programs to be offered in any combination of online or distance learning programs as well as residential programs. There's not a whole lot of consistency on that. And it's not unusual for the online programs to require perhaps a couple of days of residential study for each course that's taken. In contrast, the chiropractic programs that are generating the Doctor of Chiropractic degree, the chiropractic physician designation, as Vern referred to in previous testimony, are all rather lengthy, and they're all completely residential in nature. There is no correspondence type of program or distance learning component to that, and they must, by accreditation standards, consist of at least 4,200 hours. At Western States, our program is approximately 4,900 clock hours, or roughly 200 and, nationwide, maybe 280 semester credits in length. Comprehensive courses in physical diagnosis, lab diagnosis, differential diagnosis, radiographic diagnosis, and then diagnosis of all the different organ system disorders are augmented with practical laboratories, use of patient simulations, and clinical care experiences. It's unrealistic to expect that summary or review courses in some of these subjects in a DPT curriculum, especially when delivered in a distance learning format, provide a comparable level of competency in recognizing subtle health disorders presenting to an office. Another area that I want to look at is not only what does the educational training require, but also what is necessary in terms of licensure. And in the state of Oregon, the chiropractic physician has to have completed all four parts of the National Licensing Board. This complex set of examinations administered by the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners is given over the course of a couple of years, depending on where the student is in the program. There are four major parts to those exams, each of which consists of several hundred questions, 660 questions just on the basic sciences, another 600-plus questions on the clinical sciences, and 310 questions on the written Part 3 clinical competency, and the physical therapy subsection. I'd like to point out that that particular test administered by the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners is referred to as the physical therapy examination. Part 4 consists of a standardized patient-based multi-station practical examination assessing history-taking, physical examination, differential diagnosis, radiographic interpretation, and case management. The National Medical Examining Board administers similar tests to the medical school graduates. In contrast, the National Physical Therapy Examination is considerably shorter, consisting primarily of a 250-question examination.
Dr. Wicks.
Yes.
Since we do have your written testimony, could you maybe summarize the last couple sections?
Absolutely.
In the interest of time. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll point out in terms of accreditation, which is the independent look at it from the U.S. Department of Education, there is no consistency in terms of accreditation of these transitional Doctor of Physical Therapy programs. The American Physical Therapy Association states in its own materials that there is no accreditation of the DPT program separately, that they're relying primarily upon the regional accreditation agencies, and they don't take that focused look at the DPT section. So it's simply our opinion that at the present state, the DPT training and experience has not yet reached that level of comprehensiveness that would warrant the use of the term doctor that the public treats very special.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions?
I have a quick question.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Doctor. Do you happen to know, and this may be outside of your area of expertise, the statute currently allows somebody who's an acupuncturist to call him or herself a doctor as long as they put acupuncturist after it. Do you know how their requirements compare to either the doctor of physical therapist or the chiropractic doctors?
That's my opinion only. The acupuncture programs come in two flavors as well. There is a Master of Oriental Medicine program, which does not convey the term doctor, and then there is a Doctor of Oriental Medicine program, which is a four-year program, so it is a longer program. The Master's in Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, I believe, is a three-year academic program. So the doctor one adds an additional year to that.
Other questions? Representative Greenlee?
Just a brief comment. As somebody with a PhD and an interest in history, I do need to tell you that it was viewed as a devaluation of currency when physicians started using the term doctor.
Absolutely. The term doctor itself means teacher. I understand that entirely, as my PhD economist brother-in-law reminds me of frequently. Yes. And then I draw his blood.
And as somebody with a Juris Doctor, I never call myself a doctor.
Well, thank you, Dr. Wicks, for your testimony. We appreciate it. And maybe we'll close with two more folks, Tim Martinez and Jim Anderson. Thank you for sticking around. And if you have written testimony, if we could just maybe summarize, that would be great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Medical Association. I do apologize. I do not have written testimony, but I will be brief.
Thank you.
And please turn the red light on if you'd like me to be even briefer. But I would just like to make a couple of comments. And first of all, welcome to the wonderful world of scope of practice. You've had an hour and a half primer seminar on the issues that often end up in this committee or a committee like it in this building. My first session working for the Oregon Medical Association was 1995, and my boss at the time said, guess what, you get to do scope of practice issues. So I thought that was a really good task to have until I started getting involved with it, and I'm not sure if that was Sandy's first, but she's been around these issues for a long time as well. I would just make a couple comments. I know Mr. Anderson has a couple things that he would like to say. First is on the issue of doctor, and I appreciate what Representative Greenlich said about the currency being devalued when physicians took it over. And I actually had to smile listening to some of the chiropractic folks, because I can assure you years ago when they wanted to be called physicians, we probably made the same arguments about them at that time. So it is an issue that continues. In our perfect world, you would earn that through education. And we would not be here before the legislatures around the country or in Congress trying to argue on what we should be called. It would be by education. The only points I would make about this particular is absolutely, if somebody has earned a doctorate, they've earned that title. The problem with this bill is there's nothing in the Oregon licensing statutes for physical therapists that requires them to have a doctorate. So what you're doing is you're saying through this statute and what we'd assume would be follow-up rules that now everybody licensed as a physical therapist could call themselves a doctor. And we have a major problem with that.
Mr. Martinez, can I just, while I'm thinking of it, sorry to interrupt you, but is that also the case for any of the other, or all the other folks above line 10 there also required, are they all required to have doctorates in their licensure? Are you aware of that?
Madam Chair, I am not, but I'd be happy to follow up on that and get back to you if that would be all right.
There's an amendment coming that will limit the use of doctorate, people with a learned doctorate.
In a different piece of legislation?
No, an amendment.
That's one of the amendments? Okay.
The second thing I would say is we've had a lot of conversation with Representative Crummell and others, or we haven't, but the committee has heard a lot today, talking about lines 31 through 33 on page 2, which is characterization language. I would then call your attention, though, because I don't think I've heard this section discussed. It's section 4 on the top of page 3, then. Section 2 on that says, a person licensed under a healthcare licensing law of this state who is engaged in any activity included in the practice of physical therapy, if the activity is within the scope of practice of the person's licensure and the person does not indicate or imply that you're a physical therapist. And those don't seem to fit at all together. You know, on one hand, you're saying you can't do this, you can't bill for it unless you're a licensed physical therapist. And on the top of the next page, you're saying it's okay if it's within your scope of practice. So we have, we don't see how those two pieces fit together. And that causes us a concern primarily, and I know one of the proponents of the bill is from Redmond, which used to be rural Oregon. I don't think any of us would think of that anymore, but I think one of the things you need to look at is indeed in rural Oregon, what happens where there is no physical therapist and you have a physician or you have somebody that is acting under scope of practice and truly is providing physical therapy. Are you going to tell those folks, sorry, you now have to drive to Bend or Klamath Falls or Pendleton or wherever to seek these services? So that does cause us some concern. And I know this is what Mr. Anderson's going to talk about, so I'll just say I think the proponents also said that everybody was in agreement that 30 days was not long enough. The OMA is not one of those groups that's in agreement with that. So I'd stop there and answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Any questions? Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim Anderson here today representing the Oregon Association of Orthopedists. Again, I have no written testimony because, quite honestly, before the committee started today, we had very little heartburn with this bill until we hear that there were amendments coming forward for this bill that fouled it up completely. So Mr. Martinez has stepped on a few of them, and I would like to just direct you to Section 5, and it has been mentioned many, many times before, that everyone has reached agreement and there has been compromise on the 30-day issue. Well, there has not been an agreement. There is no compromise because we have not seen the amendments. We weren't alerted to the amendments. We were asking about amendments. We thought were coming, but we didn't see them. So to address the 120 days that is proposed by the physical therapist, it is an arbitrary number. But I'll grant you that 30 days is an arbitrary number, too. But it's an arbitrary number that has been in statute for years. Mr. Martinez was at the OMA for quite a while. I followed him there. Every session that we were there, we fought this issue. The question always came up. We want to move it off 30 days. We want more time. Just to tell you what feedback we get from physicians is there's no physician out there worth their salt that wants to wait 4 months after referral to see their patient again on a condition. Now, it was testified to by the physical therapist that 90% of their work is referral, so the doctor wants to see that patient back. That's just how practice works. So I would suggest to the committee, strongly suggest, retain the 30 days. It's worked for years. It will continue to work, and it is good common practice. And I will stop there.
Any questions?
I have a quick question. So in the case of the 30 days, my understanding from the previous panel, and let me make sure I'm getting this right, is let's say they did have a referral from a doctor, and the 30 days was no longer there, and it was 120 days. But if the doctor said, I want to see that person back in 60 days, they would see the person back in 60 days. Is that accurate, or I just want to make sure I'm understanding.
I'm not sure what kind of, Madam Chair, I'm not sure what kind of working agreement the physical therapist and the physician, whoever they might be, might have. They may have something like that, but we want to see the 30 days retained. If they work out some other deal between themselves, so be it. But a doctor knows what a condition is for that patient, and they want to continue to monitor that condition. Who knows what the condition could be? The physical therapist may not be trained to know what is happening within that individual, where a medical doctor certainly has the tools at hand to discover what is wrong with that patient if the therapy is not working. And if you give them 120 days, they may think, if I worked a little bit longer, maybe I could correct the problem. Maybe they could. Maybe they couldn't. I don't know. I'm not willing to take that chance as a patient.
Well, in follow-up in the converse, if a doctor says, I really don't need to see this person for several months, but under the law, you've got to bring this person back in 30 days, and as mm-hmm. a consumer, you know, it seems an extra step and an extra bill, and, you know, so I think it goes both ways in terms of flexibility. But
certainly could. But like I said before, Madam Chair, the 30 days has worked well, and we believe it will continue to work.
Other questions? Thank you for your testimony. Now, thank you.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate
Can
that.
Can I ask Sandy a question?
Sandy? Mm-hmm.
I mean, my impression of 30 days is about the rent. Is it not about return after the referral? Is that? I can't quickly find that section, but it's...
Do you like to ask that to what the...
Yeah.
It's on line 36, page 3. It's about physical therapy.
Quickly. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, yes, the 30 days is just for direct access at this point in time. When a patient comes to the physical therapist via a referral from the physician, usually there's a plan of care that involves, you know, a certain amount of time, and there's, you know, it's a whole different thing. So the statute is really only speaking to direct access.
Yes. And just to let you know, that is section 5 on page 3 where that
yes.
deals with that issue.
Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you. So before we close, I want to make sure, just for the record, the amendments that you've put into LC, they're dated on January 22nd. It sounds like there's some work yet to do on the bill. And my understanding is that amendments are being drafted very slowly in LC.
That's correct.
And so what we're probably looking at is that, you know, for you to go back, reflect on the testimony, talk to some of the people who are opposing, you know, maybe adjust your amendments, and then probably, you know, looking at coming back probably in March, I would think. Is that what we're looking at? Earlier?
Unknown. Yeah, I think there might be earlier than that.
Okay, I think, you know, but it's clear there's some discussion about what you've put in and maybe you want to add or...
Yeah, Madam Chair, we've talked with Legislative Council and we've offered to hand a gross for them, and so they did indicate that they would attempt to have those done and in more timely. I realize they are very behind right now, but they did indicate that it could be very soon.
Okay, and I would encourage you to share them with
absolutely.
So we can have some consensus here. Any other comments for the proponents? Thank you for your time. Really
thank you. Thank you very much.
close the public hearing on House Bill 2386. And we're running a little long, but just so you know, next week we're hoping to have two informational meetings, maybe one, at least one, maybe two, on some of the healthcare workforce issues. We're going to have some panelists come in and talk about the variety of issues that are facing us in terms of capacity around the workforce in the healthcare industry. And so if there's anyone in particular you'd like to hear on that topic, please let Sandy know ASAP.
Will we be hearing from community colleges, Madam Chair?
Yes, we are hoping to. Yes, some of the
innovation
at community colleges, yes. All right.
And just a reminder that we have a joint meeting on the Healthy Kids Initiative tomorrow in this room at 3 o'clock.
At 3 o'clock. All right.
Again.
For the whole committee.
Yes, for the full committee.
All right, and close the committee meeting. Thank you so much.